Welcome to Life Lab, hosted by David Ponder and Zach Schaefer, where we inspire listeners to live the good life through organic conversations about evergreen topics.
Life Lab captures our belief in personal evolution and a growth mindset. So,
experiment with life.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good. It's good. You know, at night when I sit down and read stories to Dylan and Marin, oftentimes there's a recurring theme in some of the stories. And it hasn't been so much in the past few months. He might be growing out of it, but there was a phase that Dylan had recently where he was really into Spider-Man. And there's a theme in Spider-Man that they use this phrase all the time, and it's a recurring theme that I really like. And that phrase is, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yes, they do use that phrase, and I agree.
And it's given me a teaching lesson to like sit down and talk with Dylan and be like, well, what does that really mean, you know? And say, you're going to become more powerful as you grow up. You know, you're going to be able to do things on your own. You're going to be accountable for things. People are going to look to you. Right now, we take care of everything for you, and someday you will be in our position taking care of things for others. And I say, so just so you know, with that power, you're going to have freedom. You're going to have the ability to choose things, but also you're going to have a lot of responsibility. A lot of things are going to depend on you. And I think that's been an important teaching moment that I've had as a parent. But it also, it's made me reflect on that too. So just trying to think through what the role is, what my role is in the different parts of my life and what personal responsibilities I have.
Yes, excellent. And that actually gives a lot of color as to why you've been wearing a Spider-Man suit around Webster lately.
Well, I got to feel the part, man.
I got to live it. That is my personal responsibility to my son.
That's right. That's right. So we always start this out with a definition. So I'll do that.
Okay.
There were three definitions that I found that I thought were good. Number one was the state or fact of being accountable or to blame for something.
I like that because I was going to talk about accountable at some point.
I like the blame piece too. Mm-hmm. Some people don't want to be able to be blamed for anything.
Well, yeah, I mean, sage advice is if you're going to blame someone, the only person you should blame is the one staring back in the mirror from you.
That's good. I like that. The next one is the opportunity or ability to act independently and make decisions without authorization. Mm-hmm. I like that one because it brings in that freedom aspect of responsibility. And then the last one is from a psychology journal, and it says, responsibilities having common sense, authority, leadership, and maturity. Being reliable, trustworthy, dependable, and answerable. So it pulls in the accountable piece in different with different nuances, like the freedom piece in the beginning, authority, leadership, and then the accountability piece. So I guess like if I had to summarize all of those definitions, I would say personal responsibility. Responsibility is having freedom and accountability.
Yeah, I like that. I like this topic because it cuts to the core of how I try to live, aspirationally, of course, but also I think of what America was founded on as a country, and how any good business should run itself. Really, any good relationship should try to engage in responsibility, personal responsibility. I mean, there's so many things from those definitions that we could go on, but when you hear accountability, what does that make you think of? Like, how do you think, oh, he or she's accountable? What's that mean to you?
I mean, it goes back to the blame piece, right? So in any situation, it's like there need to be consequences and ramifications, both positive and negative. And who is the primary beneficiary? That's the person who's accountable. And who is the primary, you know, loser in a situation that goes wrong? And that's the person who's accountable. They're the one to blame or they're the one to give credit to. That's what I think.
Nice. Yeah, that's good. So you focus on the responsibility side. I always just feel accountability is about honoring your commitments and then enduring the consequences that come from those commitments. both positive or negative. If you are not honoring your commitments, you can't be accountable in my playbook, period. And I think we live in a society where conditional commitments are not only normal, they're expected. Like, we just expect, oh, something else popped up. Dave can't make it. Yeah, something better. A different opportunity. Even though he already committed to come to my house. That's not accountability to me. That's not personal responsibility. That's trying to have our cake and eat it too.
That's a great thing, because it makes me reflect on myself as a child. And no one taught me this lesson in the words that we're saying it. And I wish that I would have had these words. And this is not to this is not to blame. This is not to say anybody's accountable who are my teachers or parents or anything like that. But I remember thinking through situations in exactly the way that you're talking about, right? I remember thinking, because I would hear teachers and people say, well, there's no excuse. This is the X, Y, and Z. And I remember thinking through the situation and being like, but something happened to them that was outside of their control that prevented them from achieving that. That is a valid excuse. Now, as an adult, and I don't think there's any good way to like explain to a kid or a child that like when you take the responsibility for something, you also take the risk that there will be something beyond your control that prevents it from occurring. And yet you're still on the hook. You're still the one who's responsible for it. I wish somebody should have explained that to me when I was younger, because it took me way too long.
Well, let's make it concrete, and let's start with like kid type stuff, parent, daily living, and then let's take it to a public person. Our kids are both very involved. They do a lot of things. You know, my one kid's on just a lot of extracurriculars, and guess what? Some of those extracurriculars overlap each other. So you have game times that are occurring at the same time, or they overlap. And so are we, what are our options then? And we talk about what commitment looks like, what responsibility entails, what conversations you should have with the coach to let them know the decision that you are making. We are not at this stage in the game, we are not Bo Jackson or Deion Sanders, where we're helicoptering from game to game, right? So we can't have the best of both worlds at this point. So you got to choose. So then what does that look like? We just don't say anything to the other coach? Or so our decision was up front at the beginning of the season, Claudia had to have conversations with each coach and say, hey, I'm playing multiple sports. We'll let you know if I can't make one of the games due to the other sport. But our rule of thumb was, if one of the two teams needs enough players to even play, then that's the one she'll have to do.
I like that.
So, but again, that's personal responsibility. Another one that I like to share, when she finished Taekwondo, the thing I'm most proud of her to date in her whole life is the conversation that she had with Master Winkler for Taekwondo, and how she told him that she's done with it and choosing to do something else. And she had that whole conversation. She didn't cry. I didn't say a word. We prepped it at the house, but she did it all. And he was just mystified. He's like, I've literally never had any student of any age talk to me like this. He was so happy.
Wow.
So that was neat. But again, it's personal responsibility. And that was a hard conversation. Now let's make it a big person. Elon Musk, CEO of multiple big companies. His time is so valuable, creates so much value for the world. Do you think he has time constraints where people are needing him to be at multiple meetings at once?
Probably not. He's probably got plenty of time.
Right? So how does he make decisions on personal responsibility? What's most important to do? I mean, I don't know. I don't have that answer. But boy, I guarantee most of his life commitments are all overlapping with each other. Because there's no way to run that many companies or be involved with that many without that issue. And then let alone have 50 kids or whatever he's got.
Yeah. Well, my from what I've heard is he has values that he weighs it against, right? And he says, so the story, whether it's true or not, and I'm sure it's not in every instance, but the story is, he says, does this get us closer to having people on Mars? If so, I'm going to do it. If not, I'm not.
That's good for SpaceX, but let's say he's got a double meeting for SpaceX and Tesla. Tesla stock's down $500 for the quarter.
I know there's a lot more complex.
But my point is, I think we look to people like this who are able to skip meetings, leaders. Like, oh, well, we invited them to today's luncheon, but you know, they're real busy and they couldn't make it, even though they committed. Something popped up, and everyone just goes, oh, okay. I don't like that. That's the wrong message. That's a conditional commitment. Don't commit.
I think that that's an inevitability of being a leader with who takes on
more, too much.
Too much. Right. And I think that we look to leaders to take on too much. Right. So like, and what I'll say is this: good leaders are able to manage that and delegate to where that situation inevitably exists. Right. Because people are always asking them to lead on stuff. So they can't avoid it 100%, but they work to minimize it. And they don't abuse that,
status.
They don't abuse that status. They don't abuse that, like driving's not a right, it's a privilege. They don't abuse that privilege.
Okay, that's fair enough. Here's my personal take. I think the average leader, not great, not exemplary, top 1%, but the average leader of whatever, a company, a group, school, they don't do it right. They spread themselves too thin. They want to see their name at the top of the ticket for all the social organizations tied to it. And, oh, you need my help? Yes, I'll do this. And then when they're not there because something popped up, they just write it off. They rationalize it. That is not useful. That is not how the best leaders do it. The best leaders have mastered the art of two letters. No. I am not, no, can't do it. Spread myself too thin. And again, Musk is a unique scenario there because he's just Musk. But for me, that's personal responsibility. Do the few things that you can do and do it with excellence. That's where the biggest impact comes from. As somebody that was doing a whole bunch of things at once, I really am speaking from experience on that. Like, I was spreading myself way too thin from 2016, 17, 18, 19, 20. With doing SIUE and trying to do all these other things. And I thought I was having a heart attack because of it.
So this brings up something that I'm thinking about, which is, why do leaders find themselves in that situation? Why do people want a leader to follow, right? Why do people allow that to happen willingly?
That's human nature.
Well, I think it comes to the two sides of the coin. When I said, if I have to boil down the definition, all those definitions I read of responsibility, there's the freedom piece, the power piece, the good piece, and then there's the accountability piece, the blame piece, the negative piece. And I think people operate from a place of fear first and foremost, and not having to commit to something, not having to be accountable and use our imagination engine in our mind and say, well, if I commit to that and then I fail, these are the negative things. I don't want to do that. I think that that is a little more powerful for most people in group settings, especially. And it's rare for someone to step up and be like, I'll take it. I'll take that responsibility. It's rarer. And that's why you have few leaders. Now, it's not rare enough that in a group you're going to have one person naturally say, I'm going to be the leader, and everybody else be like, okay. And that's why you have like fights for power. But I do think that there is some sort of a tendency for most people to, I don't want to call it shirk responsibility, but like,
to just know that somebody else in the group will step up.
Yeah, I just think about like simple stuff, like in college when they were like, we have to work as a group, we're doing a group project, right? And then they put a group together, and then inevitably someone ends up leading. But I've been in many groups where the process of figuring out who was going to step up and be responsible, because we knew whoever ended up leading was going to be the one who does the most work.
Yep.
And that process was often a slow, painful process as long in any group that I was in where no one just stepped up and was like, I'll do it. What do you think about all that?
Oh, well, I can't disagree with your personal experiences. Obviously, the courses I taught were all about group dynamics and things. So, like, that wasn't how it occurred, because we talked about how groups form. And so I just don't think students experience that.
Yeah, I was in the business school. You're in a finance class. You're going to do this group project. They didn't talk about group dynamics. They didn't talk about who's leading.
So again, it's different.
These six people are in it. Good luck.
It's different.
Right.
So, but I like everything you said though, and agree with all of it, minus one point. you equated accountability with the negative side of things, with the blame. I literally don't ever, I've never done that. I hear accountability and I think positive. Oh, I'm owning the responsibility. I've made a commitment. Yep, I'm accountable no matter how it goes. This guy right here.
I know you did. I'll rewind and listen to the episode, but when we were talking about it and I said basically the definition was the two sides of the coin, mm-hmm. the freedom and the power side, which I equate with the good side, and the accountability, responsibility, blame is a negative.
No, I'm not.
Well, no,
I
no,
get
no.
That.
You did a circular.
I don't do it that way.
Yeah, and that was great. Well, that is, I would argue, the way that you think about it is the right way to think about it.
Gotcha. Well, that's part
if,
of what,
if you want to be an achiever.
Well,
if you
but that's
be
also
leader.
Part of what I do as a consultant and coach is help people be accountable, and I can't come at it from a negative standpoint. Right. It has to be from a, you got to own your, know what your commitments are, clarify them, own up to them when they aren't met, and fix them.
Right. Well, I mean, if you think about it from the positive side, it's that you can't have freedom. You can't have power. You can't have the good without the accountability side.
So one word we haven't mentioned, and that doesn't exist without freedom, because this is at the core of freedom. Choice.
Well, you said something about America. Well, let's flip
back choice.
To that.
Yeah. I mean, choice. All of this revolves around choice. You, in my opinion, I don't think you can have personal responsibility if choice isn't involved somewhere. There has to be choice, and it can't be coercive. You can't put a gun to somebody's head. That's not choice. That's survival. Like, oh, they're really responsible. Were they? If they didn't have a choice, I mean, is that responsibility, or is that just they're taking action to preserve themselves?
That's good. I like that.
So all of this boils down to choice, and I believe that many members of our government believe people actually don't want choice, so we'll make that choice for them.
I see. Here's what I'll say. I think you've got two world ideals that run governments. You've got one. Dalio talks
you got
about
one.
This.
Money.
Oh, money for sure. But Dalio talks about this. I mean, money's an incentive to try to control people. But on the flip side, Dalio talks about this. Basically, you've got the Western philosophy, right, which is the quote-unquote personal responsibility philosophy. And then you've got the Eastern philosophy, which is
– collectivism.
Collectivism. The state has to play the parent role, mm-hmm. has to be the paternal role. And those are obviously colliding in the world that we live in today. But it is exactly what you're talking about. The Eastern philosophy, that paternalistic thing, is the government that says people – not only can people not make their own choice, they shouldn't. Like, they need guidance. We know better. Versus the Western ideal, which I would say isn't just America, right? Like, there's an entire group of countries that you could say govern this way, which are more – it's not to say that they don't take – put in laws and make choices for people in situations. But the idea on which they were founded is more skewed to the personal responsibility.
To traditional liberalism, not liberalism as it's used in political discussions today, but the liberalism means freedom.
Right.
So freedom of choice. Yeah, I would agree with that. And that all gets down to then values, right? There's different values. And I don't think people in China would say that, hey, we're not personally responsible. I can't say what they would say, but I mean, clearly they believe in and would agree with personal responsibility. I'd actually like to hear takes on that from a communist perspective on personal responsibility. That'd be interesting for me to hear about.
For sure.
I like this phrase, responsibility rails. What are my responsibility rails? Like, where do I need to be responsible and what do I not need to concern myself with? You know, it's like the tattoo I have, the circles of concern versus control. It's like, hey, where I've committed and I'm accountable, you're going to get monsters act. Like, I'm paying attention to the details. Like, if I'm owning it, it's going to happen. And if it doesn't, I own those consequences. The blame goes right here to this guy. But if it's outside of that, I have become real just – okay, cool, man. Not my deal. Like, not my thing. Your thing, buddy. You take care of it. And then, boy, that's liberating for me. So, like, this whole basketball situation this morning. We got a game. The league's very unorganized. I'm helping coach the team, so to speak. So my name's attached to it. So I have a sense of responsibility, but I can only control the aspects that I can control. And so I got this email this morning. We have a game at 9 a.m. Oh, the jerseys aren't in. You know, old Zach would have then called each parent and, oh, I'm so sorry. I can't control that. So I'm just going to send an email and be like, hey, here's where it's at. Just bring a black and white shirt. You know, and that to me is those responsibility rails. I'm going to be responsible, but I'm not going to go over the top and let it ruin my day or my sense of self-worth.
You're not going to I use this – I use a term because I've also come to that realization, but I used to flail against
things
that I couldn't control, right?
That's a good term.
Which is exactly what you would have been doing.
Oh, yeah.
You would have been like – you would have known in the end – there's nothing I can do to get these jerseys here for today's game, but I'm going to try to exert my will on the situation and see if there's not a some kind of better outcome I can elicit, right? And you, and in the end, it ends up the same.
Right. Usually. Well, and then it's status. Like, well, what are these parents going to think about me? And I didn't order the jerseys. Aren't my thing. That's the guy that's running the league.
Right.
It is what it is. So I communicate. That's as much as I can do. And move on.
Yeah.
Not let it but to me, those are the small
It's like the serenity
choices.
Prayer.
It is. But I think a lot of people get so neurotic about these things and let that neuroticism spread like a virus of negativity to everyone else around them.
Yeah.
And that's
when you
a problem.
Think about control as the component of personal responsibility that we're talking about, right? Like you have to recognize the things that you can and can't control. Mm-hmm. And even if it's something that you've committed to, If you find that you have no control over something, flailing isn't going to help it.
Right. There's a phrase we say in this house all the time. I stole it from Ray Dalio. You can have anything you want in life, but you can't have everything. That to me boils down to personal responsibility. This is coming from one of the world's richest individuals who you're like, oh, he can have everything. He's like, no, you can't. Like opportunity costs. I choose to go do whatever, climb a mountain today. Well, I can't also go sailing at the same time. Like you can't have it all at once. And anyone that's telling you that, they are lying to you.
I like to think about that when I think about ultra successful people, is that time is the great equalizer. It's mm-hmm. the one resource we all have the same amount of. So people don't think that that's true because someone like Ray Dalio can optimize their time by trading other resources to not have to do things. Right?
He has discretionary use of time. That's how I define wealth.
So he can delegate responsibility for preparing his meals and his family's meals, whoever he's
picking out his clothes.
Anything. He can delegate responsibility for the things that 99.9% of people can't delegate responsibility for. But at the end of the day, he's got 24 hours in a day, just like you do, just like I mm-hmm. do. And that's nuts to think about.
It is. Yeah, and it all gets back to choices, how we spend our time, how we use our time, how we deposit our time, if you will. I don't think you can talk about personal responsibility without also talking about choice, time, freedom, commitments. And then it could get to values, goals. A lot of people don't have goals. Or maybe their goal is like Vince Vaughn's from Dodgeball is – I don't like to set goals because I find that if I don't achieve them, it's really – I feel guilty. So I feel great not having goals. And I think a lot of people are in that boat without being so direct.
Some people love living that way, though.
And that's cool.
It's like the Jamaican lifestyle.
It is.
Right?
That's good.
Right?
That's good.
And so there's something weird that I respect about that. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, right. No, I agree. There's definitely some sort of – but let's get – even though this is usually evergreen topic, which the majority of this has been so far, I think it's important to pull in some things that have occurred lately in society that tie into this.
Okay.
What about personal responsibility when you sign a contract with someone? Isn't that you literally signing your name to say, I abide by these terms and conditions in this agreement with this other human being to do these things?
Here's where I like this, because there was a big argument in the 2008 house crash, the real estate crash. And you had people taking both sides of this argument. A lot of people were blaming people who took out loans that they couldn't afford to buy homes. And they were saying it's their responsibility. They're the ones who failed. On the flip side, you had people who were taking those people's side and saying, it's the bank's fault. The bank failed. They should never have given that loan in the first place. I tended to think, like most things, the truth was neither side was to blame. And that both sides in that contract accepted terms and conditions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the consequences will that both sides agreed to will be enacted. So who accepted responsibility? Both sides took accepted responsibility. Both sides accepted consequences, and now they're going to deal with them. On the people side, they are going to lose the home that they got. It's going to be foreclosed on. The bank is going to take it, and they're going to have their credit is going to be impacted. Their ability to take on future debt and loans at any kind of reasonable rate is going to be taken away from them. Those are the consequences that they agreed to.
And the bank's balance sheet is impaired. That's the consequence they get.
The bank is going to have a house they don't want to have, and they're going to sell it for less.
But there's a huge player that wasn't mentioned. All of this occurred because the government in 2004 changed its underwriting standards for how you can secure home mortgages and made it way less due diligent, with the goal of getting people who have poor credit into homes more easily. I just learned this from Larry Fink.
It's true, but I think that that's like a safety. That's the safety argument. The government should have made it safe so this situation couldn't have occurred in the first place.
Well, no. I'm saying that they created the entire flame from which this fire grew. So
well, they incentivized
it. They're a huge player in it as well. But of course, they then just socialized the losses and the risk.
Yeah. So I think that in any situation where you have loss, right, you can break it down to all the stuff that we just talked about, right? There was freedom in that transaction. You had the freedom of the person who decided that they wanted to get the loan. It was their choice. They had the freedom to not get a loan that they knew they couldn't afford. You had the freedom of the bank to not give the loan. They had free choice to not do
right.
it. Regardless of what incentives are on both sides, yeah. We can talk about that.
100%.
The people had the incentive to have a big house that they wanted to live in for as long as they could. The banks had incentives of money promises from the government that they wanted to get. Right, but ultimately, there was freedom there. Now, the argument of freedom versus safety, right, and I like this when it comes to personal responsibility, is, well, there should be a referee. There should be a governing body who makes sure that there's not too much freedom. We want a certain amount of freedom, but we don't want the ultimate bad outcome to happen on either side. So you need to strip some freedom away from both sides to avoid the ultimate.
Hi, I'm Mark Miller, owner of Miller Furniture, your home for quality American-made furniture since 1927. I'd like to expand on Life Lab's motto, which is experiment with life, and how it relates to us as a furniture company. We're currently in our 95th year in our American Furniture Retail Experiment. Each year, we continue to tweak and optimize what we can do for you, our valued customer. And in any experiment, you must have control groups and variables. Our control groups are, first, you must be incredibly knowledgeable about your product. And this allows you to help customers make really good home furnishing choices that they'll love for many, many years. Secondly, you must provide accurate delivery expectations when the customer is in the research and purchasing phase. And third, you must address any and all customer issues after the sale. So that's the controls. If you can't do that, you're never going to be any good at furniture retail. We've been doing this 95 years, and that is a constant, those three things. Now the fun part, the variables, things that change all the time. And I think, how can I optimize my showroom and my website so that customers love it more each and every year? Well, first, we look at different vendors. So as an independent furniture store, we have over 100 different vendors. I find new ones every single year when I go to some of the exclusive furniture markets around the country. The other important thing is, these vendors, are they equipped to provide what my customers need? So do my customers want more design options, or do they want faster delivery? Because there's often a weighing of that. If a vendor offers 100 different styles, how can you possibly be producing them quick enough? You know, maybe you only want to offer 10 styles and get them to the customer in 6 weeks instead of 6 months, those kinds of decisions. Product styles, those will always vary and evolve. We know that styles are cyclical and things come back over time, and we center around classic designs with strong staying power, because when you buy a solid hickory top or solid cherry wood Amish-made table or bedroom set, most people expect that to last 20 or 30 years, so you don't want to go too trendy. But it is important to have more trendy design options so that you have some like right-now appeal. Other variables are in the upholstery, your living room, your fabrics, your leathers. Those things change almost seasonally, but certainly year by year, different colors are become more popular than others. We see that now with warmer neutrals coming back in style, and some of the grays and grayses that were all the rage of the past 5 years are still popular, but they're not quite where they were even 12 months ago. Now, one thing that we have is Amish-made solid wood furniture that allows us to customize the finishes. So you can make the same design look completely different just by using different wood finishes and or paints and combinations of those things. So we have looks that you just won't find in the mass-produced furniture business. Most of the furniture in this country, in the United States, is imported. The wood furniture, 88.7% of the wood furniture sold in 2019 was imported. And nearly 100% of what I show in my showrooms is American made. So we're doing things very, very different than most furniture stores you're going to find. They don't offer custom finishes on any of that mass-produced imported stuff. Plus, they're using things like Asian hardwood, rubber wood, mango, other woods that are soft and not nearly as pretty as maple or cherry or hickory, quarter sawn oak. Anyway, those are all different, the variables. The other thing is there's design-oriented customers and there's practical use customers. So if you're going to buy a kitchen table and you want to have it and it's going to be used all the time, kids are going to do homework on it, you're going to eat breakfast and dinner there, you know, that's something you might consider doing a solid hickory top with more of a medium wood finish because, one, hickory is the hardest wood, so you're not going to dent it as often. Two, a medium to light finish is going to be more forgiving. You're not going to see all those little marks. But if you're more of a design-oriented customer and you want a sleek, dark wood with a nice, clean finish, cherry or maple is going to be the wood species, and you might do a dark finish like onyx or dark night, which has a little bit of a gray undertone. So those are all the things, and that's going to be for a more design-oriented customer. Those are all the variables that are – and there's so many more. There's an endless amount of variables in the furniture retail business. And, you know, in my brick-and-mortar operation in our three St. Louis area stores, there's one additional constraint, and that's physical size. So I am in the middle of a furniture retail experiment, and I have 48,000 square feet of usable showroom space and about the same amount of warehouse space to try to figure out what's the best mix of product for my customers. And that's the experiment that I literally do every single day and that my family's been doing for four generations. And after a while, you know, you get pretty good at that kind of stuff. So we're truly experts in our field. And with the nationwide delivery capabilities that we now have, we can bring you our amazing furniture into your home so you can enjoy it for many, many years to come and hopefully decades as well. And that's going to be on millerfurniture.com. That's M-U-E-L-L-E-R furniture.com and our specific Amish furniture website called Amish Furniture Direct USA. You can also call me directly on my personal cell phone at 618-977-8716. Ask for Mark Miller, and I will be happy to have a conversation about whatever your home furnishings needs are. Thank you so much for your time, and it is an honor to sponsor
and that's
Zach
the whole
and Dave
like,
here on
government
Life Lab.
Argument. There needs to be a government
there. Yeah, and that's fine, that analogy, but it's just never accurate because the referee in life with financial transactions or asset-based transactions, it's never a referee. It's referees in a game don't change the rules in the middle of the game. And that's what occurs all the time. So to me, that metaphor, it's just a simple metaphor to talk about these things. But it's not true how it works in the world because they just change the whole system whenever they want.
Right.
You don't play a basketball game. The ref doesn't say, okay, if you hit the backboard, you get 3 points.
Right, right.
But that is what occurs.
Well, and I think that's the ultimate libertarian versus
– Right, and libertarians – which I am one, they tend to say, oh, the government should just be the referee. And it's like, yeah, I get it. That's just too simplified.
Well, I think libertarians are like, there shouldn't be a referee, right?
Well, like the hardcore ones.
Or hardcore libertarians are like, we should go play this game, and however the game ends up, like, well, here's the rules. Sure, there's rules, but there shouldn't be anyone preventing us from playing the game that we want the way that we want to play it within those rules.
Most libertarians, even the hardcore ones, think there should be a judicial system to where you can go argue your cases. Right, so that would be the referee.
Right.
I wasn't even going to go to the home loan. Student loans.
Oh, here we go. It's just the same thing.
I was a PhD student, man. Yeah. People just take loans. I took loans. Yeah. I didn't use them for school. I used them to go on vacation. I used it to pay for my honeymoon. Oh, yeah. I bought a motorcycle with my first student loan I ever took out. Well, think about that. Hold on. Think about that headline. Right? You look at me and think, oh, I'm successful. Now read the headline. 20-year-old student uses student government-subsidized student loan to buy a crotch rocket. That doesn't read very well, but that's exactly what I did.
Yeah.
Now I paid it all back.
Well, and people don't realize. Well, here's the deal. You had success. You had the ability to pay it back. And so everything turned out good for you, right? And so nobody will complain. Everyone will be like, okay, that's fine. Like, he should have been able to go buy his crotch rocket because it ended up good, right? On the flip side, if you
I honored the contract.
Right. And on the flip side, if you would have failed – then people would have been pointing at you as the classic reason why we need to reform the student loan system.
But the ultimate
thing that I wanted to say in this is when I'm going to try and teach my kids this. This is also something that it took me a long time to learn. In that situation where you're borrowing money from the government, if you read a story, if that's in the Wall Street Journal, they're going to talk about how you're taking money from the banks. And ultimately, the taxpayers who are backing them. And so that's the people who are losing in the situation whenever you take too much student loan debt. They don't talk about the fact that you're borrowing from your future self. Mm-hmm. And that's something I want to teach my kids as far as personal responsibility when it comes to committing. Because think about any commitment. Debt is that type of commitment where you're borrowing from your future self. If you commit to something, the basketball league, you are borrowing time from future self. Mm-hmm. You're telling future self, Zach, you have to do this. And so it's all – I think one of the ways to judge whether you did this correctly or not is to – when you experience something, think about the fact that past you put you in this situation. You know what I mean?
Let me put it to you this way. If your kids were getting out of college and had a bunch of debt, would you want them to be like, yes, the government's paying off a big chunk of all these student loans that I took out?
Would I want them to be like that?
Or would you say, well, you took these loans. You are on the hook to pay these back.
I would neither. I would want them to realize the risk framework with which they
I was going to say that wouldn't happen for my kids because they have financial literacy. Yeah. And they would be taking loans not to buy motorcycles like idiot dad did. They'd learn from what dad did.
Right. Well, and here's the thing. My kid, I would even say this. My kid might even make that decision to buy a motorcycle with their student loans. And of course, I wouldn't like it. But as long as they demonstrated to me that they understood the risk that they were taking about the future that they were going to have to live, then I would say, if you truly understand it. Now, do they truly understand it? Probably not. You
know I mean, there's no way to prove that. They know that what they can say to dad to make dad think that
you can verbally
it.
Say like, oh, I've imagined that situation, mm-hmm. dad, and I'm willing to accept the consequences. But if they've never been through a similar situation, then they don't really know what they're getting themselves into. But on the flip side, as long as they think through it and they say – they're like, okay, I understand. This is the – you know what I mean? It's accepting personal responsibility.
Right.
That's what it is. So then all of a sudden if the government comes in and rides in a white horse and says, oh, guess what? You don't have to pay us back. I would just say to them, you took a gamble. You got lucky and you won that gamble because the government did something. And that's the same for every personal responsibility situation that you ever have. Like your basketball situation, mm-hmm. right? All of a sudden an Amazon truck driver could show up out of nowhere with some jerseys at your game and you'd be like, oh, this worked out, right? Like, and I wouldn't say like, oh, I'm upset that happened. Mm-hmm. What I would say is there was a gamble in the situation, right? Like it looked like it was going to go bad and then some force that you can't control came in and made it go good for you personally at the cost of who knows what the other cost is, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you understand that like that's not something you can count on. And you don't use that to make more decisions that way in the future, then fine.
What if you could get a college scholarship because of your something tied to your identity, like you're Native American? So you could get a full ride to college.
Dude, where are you going here, man? You're trying to get us in trouble on this podcast.
And your name is Tyson, let's say.
Okay.
And you learn this and you say, no, I don't want that. I don't want to get paid to go to school because of who I am. What would you think if that was your kid that turned down a full ride to Texas A&M, could have been given because of, again, their heritage, and they literally say, no thanks, I'll pay my own way and take loans on my own. And that's what he did.
I mean, I'd be proud. I'd be proud, and obviously.
Right.
You know.
And now, clearly, that's not bad, taking that. That's not the point I'm making.
Yeah.
But you answered it a certain way.
I didn't earn this. I don't deserve it.
That's what his point was.
Yeah. And so I'm not.
And I'm not saying that that should be the point. Yeah. That was how he took it. And he invoked that word of, well, this is my responsibility. This is what I think I need to do. But also, I think he's a unique individual.
That's
a unique individual. And that's what he uses as fuel to power himself and his business.
So I guess, are you saying the analog for that in the situation we're talking about with the student loans would be someone who failed, that they're not going to be able to pay their student loans, or they're having difficulty. Let's just say that. And the government steps in and goes, guess what? We're going to forgive these. And they go, no. Like, I don't want you to forgive those. Like, I owe that money.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, sure. Like,
that just means that the taxpayers of America are going to have to pay that. So everyone in the U.S. is going to pay 0.00001 cent of my – but that matters to me. I don't want that.
Here's the person that I'm thinking in my head, a person that I know that's a professor, grown person in their mid to late 50s now. They took every student loan they could possibly take forever, and they went they got multiple master's degrees and a PhD, and all they do is bitch about their student loan debt on Facebook for all those years, and they're the person that took all that debt. They don't even have kids, dude. They're not even married, okay? And then this student loan, oh, it's good enough. It's not good enough. They should pay off all my student loans. That's the message coming from this individual. Yeah. That's the person I'm thinking about. That's the person that I make sure I have my 100-foot stick from and say, don't fucking come near my family, dude. Don't infect me with your mindset.
Yeah, yeah.
That's real common.
Yeah, that is. That is. That's a super weak individual. I mean, that goes back to the idea of individual responsibility versus depending on a group.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Socialism, so to speak.
Yeah, it's just interesting. There's just consequences for our choices, and I think we're getting to the point – it feels like we're getting to the point where the choices we make or the commitments we make, we can just look to somebody else to save us when the going gets rough, and man. I don't think that's a good thing.
Yeah, you know what we never discussed in this is ability, which I think is an important thing.
Oh, yeah, especially for loans. We could start right there. Ability, there better be litmus tests. We shouldn't be getting people loans who don't – ninja loans, no income, no job. Here you go. Like, yeah. That's insane.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, and I was even thinking of it in the context of okay, so that person that you just described basically funded their adult life with taxpayer money.
Absolutely.
Through – a student loan program, right? So, like, we have social safety nets in place for people who have legitimate disabilities, right? So people who actually are handicapped, have physical disabilities, have mental disabilities that literally need us to help support them. Those programs suffer, right, because of all kinds of other leeches that are sucking money that should be going to them to give to legitimate people, including illegitimate people claiming disability and stuff like that. And the situation that you just talked about, somebody who has ability but is using a different program to suck money out of the system to mm-hmm. fund their life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it all comes back to ability, right? And so, like, I would say ultimately we're talking about personal responsibility. And I – there's a side of me, right? We've been talking about, oh, personal responsibility is the best. You have to be responsible for yourself, yada, yada, yada. There is an assumption there that you are able. And I do think that the weak should be taken care of. I think that the disabled, you know, deserve.
I think that's a good disclaimer.
Yeah.
I think when we've been talking about a person that can get around and has cognitive ability.
I just want to make that clear.
Yeah. Because, yeah, absolutely.
You know, because I like 100%.
I agree too.
Like, oh, socialism is bad.
And I also want to clarify: I'm not against people getting scholarships for some identity reasons. Like, let's just clarify that
cool.
So people don't jump down our throats. But we do have a specific person that did not do that.
You know,
so that's why I thought it was interesting.
Well, and then that's interesting. I guess then I'm on the hook to say, well, why did I decide that I would say I'd be proud of my son if he said that? And I think the reason that I would say that is because he's living by his principles,
or
his values.
Or at least he's thought it through.
Well, yeah, but like a person with values and principles, their actions support those values and principles.
That's right? Just wisdom. Wisdom is living according to the values and principles you say you have. And if you don't and you're hypocritical, to me, that's just human. That's just the norm.
Right. I'm sure in that – so that situation, if I said, okay, well, then the analog to that is if someone – lived a life where they just ran up student loan debt and they were having trouble paying it back, and the government forgave it, and they said, no, I owe this back. I don't want to take money from people. I'm perfectly able, right? This is my own failure, and I'm going to have to deal with it. I can see many parents who, if their kid was in that situation, the parents would be like, are you an idiot?
Right, of course.
Take that money.
I think the majority would. It's the same. What was that movie Russell Crowe was in years ago? He was the boxer during the Depression, and he had to accept government handouts and subsidy. And after it got the Depression kind of wended down, his boxing career came back, and he went and paid all that money back. What was the name? It was a really good movie, and it's a true story. That, again, it's rare. That's why we remember it, because that's not how the average person operates. It's, oh, I got free money. Thanks, government. That's what you're here to do. You're here to pick me up when I fall. I just don't view government that way. But what I do view, and I have no strong opinion on this student loan forgiveness thing. Either way, I can see both sides. I don't have a strong opinion because it's what politicians do. They give away shit. They give away free money. They buy votes. Like, they're doing what they do as a breed. So it's not – it's totally normal, whether it's the Democrats with the loan or Republicans giving it to big business. That's the game they're in. So it's it would be unnormal if they didn't do it.
And it sucks so bad. Here's the thing. If our system were perfectly efficient and I knew – like, let's say I'm in that situation and I'm the one being offered student loan forgiveness. If I knew that we had an efficient system where that money that I would be taking was truly coming out of the pockets of people that would benefit from it better, I would stick to that principle. I'd be like, no, I'm going to have to pay it back. Like, I am not going to do this at the cost of other people.
If that,
let me finish.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Our system, my mind goes to, our system is so corrupt and full of bullshit anyway that there's even if I don't take that money, like, everyone's still going to be screwed equally because of the level of corruption. It's that money's just going to be directed to some other bullshit government program, or somebody takes it, right? Like, that's where my mind goes.
Brett Favre takes it. Have you seen that news story?
So anyway,
my only point was going to say, in your scenario, if you had to make that personal decision, that is not an efficient system. If the system was efficient, it would eliminate that, so there's no choice, so that those funds are going to the best person in need.
Good point.
But again, the assumption underlying all that is fairness, as if we can ever create that perfectly. That's an ideal. It's not everyone is equal in very real and physical ways. So the best we can do is try to create systems that approach that ideal, I believe.
So what are we saying? Like, I'm trying to boil – we've said a lot of stuff and got really nuanced, and I love everything that we're saying. But what is the core of what we're saying?
I have three words.
Okay.
That's the core of personal responsibility. And I've totally stole this from the Duke women's head basketball coach. She had a 2-minute little Twitter motivational speech she was giving her students off the cuff at an early morning practice, and somebody captured it, and it's awesome. You should go watch it on Twitter. This is what I'm trying to do for my kids and how I try to live, I guess. Handle hard well. That's personal responsibility. She's like, you think it's going to be easier if we win the championship and that next day? No, it's harder because now people expect that. Every success you have, it's harder because now the bar is raised. Handle hard well. If you practice hard today, you have to practice harder tomorrow. That's why I'm a hard ass on my kids. I am life. Kizzy is compassion and love. I want my kids to be able to bump into hard and handle it and grow from it and own the consequences and failures and problems. I try to live that way. I'm not perfect. Nobody is. But to me, that's the people who are personally responsible, they just handle hard well.
That's good. I'll round that out.
Yeah.
Being able to handle hard well includes choosing to play the game on hard.
Ooh, nice.
Right? It's like the beginning of a video game, you know? You're going to play it on easy mode?
Nice. I like that.
Yeah. All right.
Know the game. So for me, change challenge would be going back to how we kicked this off. Think about your life and your commitments you have made. Work commitments or personal? I think we see this probably more in personal commitments. I do anyway. Where are you doing conditional commitments? Where are you being like, yeah, we'll see. We'll play it by ear. Or you actually commit and then something else cooler or whatever pops up and then you decommit. Make a list of that and just think about, is that important to you? Do you think that's good? Are you letting yourself down? Are you letting others down? Are you overextending yourself? Are you really focused and feeling good in the zone, so to speak? But I don't like conditional commitments. But again, maybe people have different takes on it. That's fine. But where are you conditionally committing to things? And is that helping or harming you and others around you?
That's good. That's good. I like it. Here's mine. Here will be mine. Take a period of time and you define it yourself. It could be a day, it could be a week or whatever. And don't go to the extreme of the Jim Carrey movie where he says yes to everything. What is that? Yes, man?
Mm-hmm.
But take it a little – take it further than you normally would when you say yes and you commit to things. You know, I think that there are a lot of people who, myself included, something – will see an opportunity and say, I'd like to do that. I'd like to commit to that. But I'm busy. But I've got this other stuff, right? So if we're talking about playing life on hard mode, that's what's going to make a full life, right? Nobody ever looks back on life and is like, oh man, I'm glad I avoided that experience. I'm glad I didn't do that and that and that. No, people always wish they would have done more. People always wish they would have experienced more, even if that includes failure, because that's what makes us learn and be a better person. So I would say over a period of time, could be a day, could be a week, whatever you choose, skew to the yes side when it comes to making commitment and really taking on personal responsibility.
Awesome. Love it. Well, hopefully you've enjoyed this and you have some, this was a fairly practical conversation. You should have some things that you can get out there and take action on. And as we say at Life Lab, experiment with life.